as part of a far-left network is, first of all, false, that the network doesn't exist. But second of all, it's a way of trying to weaponize these resources that governments have against the left so as to get them out of the way so the right has a better chance of coming to power in European governments. And yes, the U.S. is entirely behind this. The U.S. is also talking about setting up, they've destroyed Voice of America and the other kind of global networks the U.S. used to have, but now they're talking about actually building in Europe a kind of, you know, Fox News for Europe in order to, again, give the far right a push. So this is all playing out on the political field. Orban is central to this because right now he controls the state and state resources. But after Sunday, you know, I think he's actually going to be out of power, and then we'll see.
Kim Lane Shepley, I want to thank you so much for being with us, professor of sociology and international affairs at Princeton University, specializing in the rise and fall of constitutional government with a focus on Hungary. That does it for our show. Happy birthday to David Prude, and an early happy birthday to Anna Osbeck, Diego Ramos, and Maria Inez Terracena. I'll be at the IFC Center here in New York City this weekend, all through tonight and tomorrow morning at 10:30, as well as through the afternoon and evening and Sunday for the opening, the theatrical release of Steal the Story, Please, about the 30 years of Democracy Now. I'll be there with the directors of the film, T. Lesson and Carl Diehl, and many others. You can check it all out at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for jobs. I'm Amy Goodman.
Hi.
Hello?
Is this Joey Ramone?
Yes, it is.
Why do you still sound the same after all these years?
Because it's me.
No, but I mean the band.
Because we're great.
Because you're great.
Hey!
Tune in Wednesday, April 15th at 8 p.m. as we celebrate Joey Ramone Day. Grab a slice or some chicken vindaloo and tune in to Ditch Digger as we remember Joey Ramone. That's Joey Ramone Day at 8 p.m. April 15th right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Earth Archetypes, presenting How on Earth Live, an improv show centered on climate action at the Alberta Abbey on April 14th. Tickets and information are available at eartharchetypes.com.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:02. Coming up right now, it's your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon Republicans gather signatures to send another tax bill to the voters.
The Rosenberg News Review will publish its last print edition this month.
And over 100 homeless service workers will be out of a job by June as the nonprofit Sunstone Way closes.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 10th, 2026. I'm Uchenna Nwezor.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Oregon State Republicans plan to refer yet another tax bill to the voters. In May, Oregon voters will vote on whether the state should raise gas taxes to support transportation and infrastructure projects. Now, that's not the only tax bill Republicans want voters to weigh in on. Governor Tina Kotek signed Senate Bill 1507 into law on Thursday. It, quote-unquote, unlinks Oregon's tax code from some of the tax breaks made at the federal level last summer in the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. That unlinking saves Oregon around $300 million in lost tax revenue and keeps the state from having to make steep service cuts in the last legislative session. Daniel Hauser from the Oregon Center for Public Policy spoke with KBOO back in February about his support for the bill. He says because Oregon copies the federal tax code very closely, the Big Beautiful Bill really hurt the state's finances.
With those almost $900 million in lost revenue because of this bill, SB 1507 rolls back three of the dozens of tax breaks that were in it. So the three tax breaks, first is a tax break for what's called bonus depreciation. Bonus depreciation is a way that businesses can push up into 1 year all of the things, the capital assets, the equipment, machines, cars, what have you, that they buy. Instead of deducting it over time, they deduct it all at once. And so Oregon, with SB 1507, is going to no longer allow that for really big businesses. Small businesses have a separate provision that they can still use. The second thing it'll do is it will disconnect Oregon from the auto loan interest deduction. The auto loan interest deduction is a policy created by HR 1 that allows folks on brand new cars to deduct the interest on the loan, but does not provide any benefit to folks who are buying, a struggling family that buys a used car would receive no benefit. So Oregon's going to disconnect from that as well. And the third tax policy that would be disconnected from is what's called Qualified Small Business Stock Exclusion, QSBS. This sounds nice, but it's really a tax break that disproportionately helps venture capitalists and millionaires when they invest in startups, commonly like tech startups in California as a good example. So those three measures are what we're disconnecting from HR 1, and that'll bring in about $340 million in the current budget period.
That was Daniel Hauser from the Oregon Center for Public Policy. State Republicans like Representative Ed Deal and Dwayne Yunker are leading the effort against SB 1507 called No Tax Clawback. They must collect 100,000 signatures by June 4th to refer the issue to the ballot.
The Roseburg News Review will stop publishing physical newspapers and lay off a majority of its staff later this month. It ends a 159-year run of print papers serving Douglas County on the southern Oregon coast. OPB reports that 11 out of the 15 staffers at the paper will lose their jobs as the paper's parent company, Lotus Media Group, restructures itself. Videographer Jake Tranter addressed the changes in a video posted to the News Review's website.
But that does come with a catch. Unfortunately, we have to announce that the time of physical newspaper has come to an end. I wish that wasn't the case, and I wish we could continue with the traditional style of newspaper forever, but between rising costs, paper shortages, tariffs, and about 20 other factors, the cost of printing has reached an unsustainable point. The last version of the News Review paper will be April 24th, 2026.
The company plans to remove the paywall from its website and change its model to focus on advertising revenue and support from premium subscribers. Lotus Media, the parent company, said in a statement that the News Review website will expand into video and entertainment productions alongside local news stories. A report from Northwestern University found that 136 newspapers closed in the year leading up to October 2025.
The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners voted unanimously to enshrine sanctuary policy into the county code on Thursday. Oregon is a sanctuary state, meaning that law enforcement and government agencies are not allowed to help ICE or immigration enforcement without a warrant from a judge. The state law on the issue first passed in 1987 and was updated in 2021. It became especially important last year during Trump's immigration crackdown. Over 1,000 people were arrested by ICE in Oregon last year, according to research by the Deportation Data Project. That's 10 times the amount who were detained by ICE the year before. Roughly two-thirds of those arrested had no criminal convictions. The Multnomah County Board passed an ordinance and resolution unanimously on Thursday. It echoes state-level protections and clarifies that immigration enforcement is not allowed in restricted areas in county buildings. It also outlines a protocol for how county workers should react if that happens. County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson emphasized the importance of adding sanctuary status to the county code.
Our country, our state, our county is better and stronger for our immigrants. And the vilification that is happening, the attacks that are happening, are shameful, and they're having real damage, and real damage in our community, real damage personally, but also real damage to the future of this country, right? We are not going to be able to do all the things that we want to do, have the economic vitality that we want, have the growth that we want to have in our country without our immigrant community. And we know, I know this from my own experience with my family and what I see in the community, but we are a richer, better community because of our immigrant populations. And we at the county level cannot stop what is happening. We cannot right all of the harms that have been done, but we can do these actions today. We can follow through on this resolution, on this ordinance that we're passing today, with a commitment to see those through, to continue to stand strong.
That was Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson speaking about the sanctuary status ordinance and resolution that the board passed at their meeting on Thursday.
Over 100 workers from the Portland area nonprofit homeless service provider Sunstone Way will lose their jobs by the end of June. 175 total workers will lose their jobs as the nonprofit folds after allegations of financial mismanagement. That also means the closure of several shelters that Sunstone Way had been operating. A 96-bed overnight shelter in the Centennial neighborhood and a 38-bed pod shelter in the Lloyd District will close, Willamette Week reports. The shelter, the nonprofit operated on NATO, will stay open under new management. The Sunstone Way staff union steward told Oregon Live that the workers hope to find some roles with the new provider and that they intend to bargain for severance pay before the nonprofit folds. It may not be the end of pains for the social services sector. Both Portland and Multnomah County face significant budget shortfalls and are likely to cut back on the homeless services they offer. April and May are the times when local governments reconcile their budgets for the coming year and are a key time for locals to make their voices heard about what programs should be cut or preserved.
Advocates for affordable health care say that Washington state leadership is not doing enough to protect access and keep prices down for residents. New data shows Americans are now more worried about the cost and availability of health care than any other issue. But several bills that would have addressed the issue in Washington did not pass this session. KBOO's Alex Privé has more on the story.
A new Gallup poll shows the cost of health care is now the top concern for Americans. But advocates for affordable health care in Washington say the state is not doing enough to protect access for residents. Federal cuts to Medicaid and health care subsidies mean 400,000 or 1 in 20 Washingtonians may lose health coverage in coming years. Sam Hatzenbieler of the Economic Opportunity Institute says in this year's 60-day session, lawmakers could not get any significant healthcare policies across the finish line.
The millionaire's tax passed, and that is really going to bring in desperately needed revenue, but that money won't come in until 2029. So that leaves a few very crucial years before that money comes in, and our state can't wait that long.
The millionaire's tax would bring in over $3 billion annually for education, healthcare, and childcare, and is being challenged in the state Supreme Court. Hatzenbieler adds, the rates of healthcare premiums on the exchange increased over 20% this year alone, pushing rates for some families to over $30,000 a year. State Senator Emily Alvarado says more families are skipping or delaying medical treatment because of cost, including 4 in 10 cancer patients. She sponsored a bill this session that would have capped interest rates on medical debt to 1%. She says currently, people are charged up to 9% interest on their debt.
And that interest rate, I believe, is punitive, and it sends families spiraling deeper and deeper into debt, harder to get out.
Another bill Alvarado sponsored would have charged a fee to large corporations like Walmart and Amazon to help the state cover health insurance for their employees on Washington's Medicaid program. She says in the wake of federal cuts to health care through H.R. 1, state leaders need to act with urgency to lower health care costs. For KBOO News and Public News Service, I'm Alex Purvey.
Vice President Vance is confident in the, quote, fragile truce between the U.S. and Iran. A former House Speaker says the president's power is overshadowing Congress, and polls show a third Trump impeachment has public momentum. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The Iranians have agreed to open up the straits. The United States has agreed to stop attacking. And not just the United States, but also our allies have agreed to stop attacking. And that is the basis of this fragile truce that we have.
Vice President J.D. Vance says he's confident the Iran war ceasefire will last, but it already faces challenges. Israel has continued bombarding Lebanon, and Tehran responded by again slowing traffic through the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. will hold talks between Tel Aviv and Beirut, and Trump continues to make a variety of statements, including threats to resume, quote, bigger, better, and stronger attacks on Iran. Some stated goals of the war, including ending Iran's nuclear program, now seem well out of U.S. reach. The White House says troops will remain in the region to ensure Iranian compliance as terms are being worked out. Those favoring diplomacy note the deal negotiated under former President Barack Obama restrained the nation's nuclear activities with much less risk. Trump continues to criticize European allies who participated in the Obama deal and now says the U.S. will consider leaving NATO because its members refused to help with the war. America can't formally leave NATO without an act of Congress, but the administration could remove U.S. forces protecting the continent. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte admits alliance members didn't help reopen Hormuz, in part because they had no warning. Either way, he says, NATO is in a moment of profound change.
Europe is assuming a greater and fairer share of the task of providing for its conventional defense. And from that, there will be no going back, and nor should there be. This is a move from unhealthy codependence to a transatlantic alliance grounded in true partnership.
A fourth Iran War Powers resolution failed in the House. Democrats still want to limit Trump's authority, but even Republicans who oppose the war argue the resolution is pointless with the ceasefire in effect. Former Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says Trump's second-term power is successfully usurping Congress's role.
He has a greater determination of whether a Republican wins re-election than any leader in Congress does. He raises the money. Bills don't pass. He's the whip and the speaker, the president is right now.
With only a tiny majority, the current speaker faces a maybe impossible to-do list, reauthorizing the unpopular Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and passing a stalled Homeland Security budget. Meanwhile, new polls show a majority of Americans support impeaching Trump for a third time. The Free Speech for People poll finds more than half of independents and nearly a quarter of Republicans support the move. The group's president, John Bonifaz, calls that extraordinary, given Trump has only been back in power for 14 months.
The people know Donald Trump has committed multiple abuses of power and that Congress must do its job, carry out its sworn duty to protect and defend our Constitution, and impeach and remove this lawless president.
Some of those surveyed cited military actions in Latin America, the Iran war, and indiscriminate ICE raids that have even reached into military families. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather brings a chance of rain with an overnight low of 52 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 63. Today in history, in 1930, American labor leader and civil rights activist Dolores Huerta was born. She is a co-founder of the United Farm Workers. She's known for her advocacy for workers, immigrants, and women's rights. Huerta also originated the phrase, "Sí se puede," yes we can. The quote of the day is from Huerta, who said, quote, "Every moment is an organizing opportunity. Every person a potential activist, every minute a chance to change the world."
Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin will seek re-election later this year. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas.
After much speculation, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin announced earlier this week that he will seek re-election later on this year. KJZZ's Gabriel Piatarasio has more.
Nigrin became the youngest president in Window Rock after defeating incumbent Jonathan Nez 4 years ago. He won that race by just more than 3,500 votes. In a video message on social media, Nigrin picked up his signature black open crown hat.
And I will be tossing my hat into the race for Navajo Nation president. Let's keep building on the momentum that we've built so far.
Since his inauguration, the sitting president has faced considerable scrutiny. A special prosecutor has called for his immediate resignation over alleged ethics violations that included the misuse of public funds, while Navajo Nation Council delegates continue trying to oust him. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatarazio.
A nonprofit tribal organization has published a book that presents Tlingit Raven stories for the first time in the original language with English translations. The 860-page volume brings together 50 stories by 7 Tlingit storytellers across Southeast Alaska. As KCAW's Hope McKenney reports, the stories were transcribed from recordings of oral performances and include some of the oldest known recordings of these stories told in Tlingit.
75-year-old Eshka Daphne Wright grew up listening to her aunt, Catherine Mills, tell her stories of Raven, a cultural hero, world maker, and trickster figure among the Tlingit of Southeast Alaska.
I can just remember we'd be sitting in the kitchen, around the kitchen table, and it was maybe in the evening when everyone just kind of sitting around and just kind of a warm feeling and just listening to my aunt's voice.
Wright says reading this book, which features stories from her aunt, is like hearing her aunt's voice again.
I miss her so much, you know, and I miss my mother. It just means so much that there's something here, an actual physical book, you know, that has her stories in it.
This volume has been more than 4 decades in the making. It's the 5th in a series of books from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute called The Classics of Tlingit Oral Literature, and is the first in the series to be exclusively focused on Raven. Will Geiger is a research specialist with the Southeast nonprofit. Geiger says Raven is one of the most developed characters in the Tlingit oral tradition, with stories ranging from sacred to humorous.
Mostly he appears in the form of a person. And he can change forms. He turns into a woman, a little hemlock needle, and he turns into a raven, too.
For Skakey Heather Powell Mills, a Tlingit language teacher in Hoona, hearing or reading these stories in the original language leads to deeper understanding.
Hearing our language is, it's like medicine to us, to have a strong connection to the land, to understand where you come from in order to know where you're going.
Mills says she's grateful these stories were recorded and preserved for future generations.
We don't have the time we used to have to spend the winters together sitting and transferring that knowledge. I think this is a great way for us to learn. It was their dream for us.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
The book is currently available through Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's website. Geiger says they also hope to make the original audio recordings of these stories available in the near future. I am Jill Freitas.
The Trump administration has proposed a more than 30% cut to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's 2027 budget. Ocean advocates say the reductions would harm New England coastal communities, which rely on NOAA's marine zone forecasts and other services tracking the impacts of climate change. Catherine Carley has more on the story.
Ocean advocates in New England are calling on Congress to reject proposed funding cuts to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The White House aims to slash more than $1 billion from NOAA operations and scientific research programs, which help improve marine zone forecasts and fisheries management. Sarah Winter Whelan, executive director of the Healthy Ocean Coalition, says coastal communities could lose access to critical weather and climate data.
Not having that information for people who go out on the ocean for their job, their livelihood, could put economies and actual humans at risk.
The White House argues some agency grant programs push agendas harmful to America's fishing industry. The cuts are part of a broader effort to constrain non-defense spending and boost the Pentagon's budget by more than 40%. The Trump administration has largely rejected climate science and cut programs and policies it refers to as part of a Green New Scam. Climate change is already impacting Maine with rising sea levels, a warming ocean, and increased storm intensity. Whelan says it's vital that federal agencies continue to monitor and predict long-term climate trends to better protect coastal communities and the region's fishing and lobstering industries.
If the ocean changes dramatically from climate change, and we don't have a functioning federal government that can track and manage those changes, we're in trouble.
Other science-driven agencies like the EPA and FEMA also face dramatic funding reductions. Bipartisan support for NOAA helped the agency avoid dramatic funding cuts during previous budget negotiations. Whelan is urging the public to contact lawmakers again to share their own personal stories of how federal programs that benefit the ocean impact their lives. I'm Catherine Carley for Maine News Service.
New reports show the federal government is falsely accusing New York of Medicaid fraud. They're claiming fraud for the state's home care program has increased, but a new report shows federal officials misread the data. This comes as the Trump administration continues to make Medicaid fraud a priority, but mostly in blue states. Edwin J. Vieira has more.
A new report finds New York State is being wrongfully accused of Medicaid fraud. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Administrator Dr. Mehmet Oz sent a letter to state officials accusing them of running a fraud-ridden Medicaid program. It also claims a little more than 5 million New Yorkers on Medicaid received home care in the first part of 2025. Michael Kinukin with the Fiscal Policy Institute says this stems from a basic math error by federal officials.
After reviewing the numbers and puzzling on it a bit, I realized what they were actually doing is adding up the monthly unique users in the program to get an annual total.
He explains if there were 100,000 users in March, April, and May, then they interpreted the data as 300,000 total users in 3 months. Kinukin feels the misreading of the data should have been obvious since New York only has around 7 million Medicaid enrollees total, most of whom are non-disabled adults and kids with no need for home care. Mostly blue states received letters from CMS about their Medicaid systems being rife with fraud. However, given the misreading of New York's data, Kinukin wonders just how serious the administration and CMS's claims about Medicaid fraud are.
We know what helps to address fraud, which is collaborative partnership between the state and the federal government and good data well analyzed. The fact that there's this adversarial relationship and bad data happening in the federal alleged anti-fraud campaign really raises questions about what they're trying to do.
Other states like Maine and California responded sharply to the letters, noting the federal claims are grossly exaggerated. However, with a second budget reconciliation bill in the works, some advocates worry this attitude will be reflected in federal Medicaid spending. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
Now we go to The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio brain teaser produced by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. This week's puzzle has wordplay and spring flowers.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to send me a type of hat. Change one letter, and you have a family member. Well, there are a number of great answers this week. My intended answer was Stetson, which becomes stepson. But I also accepted top to pop, son to son, and feather to father. Our winner this week is Ian Burris, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
There's my brother's plaid pajamas and Uncle Pete's green tie. The flowered dress was Mama's and leaner tie.
Spring flowers are in full bloom here in Bend, so send me a spring flower in two syllables. Reverse the letters, and phonetically, you have something else that is early in a different type of season. So again, send me a spring flower in two syllables. Reverse the letters, and phonetically, you have something that is early in a different type of season. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
What a life I lead in the spring. What a life I lead in the winter.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of April 6th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 10th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Alex Prevey. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Catherine Carley, Jill Freitas, and Pearl Stark. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 108.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Uchenna Nwezor.
And I'm Sam Bowman. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.